From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one, Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. How's everybody doing out there? Crazy times indeed, if you're following the news, and if you're listening to this show, you are. But welcome to Conversations with David, my monthly show with David Icke, and I'm very happy to have David with me. And for a lot of lucky people, October 27th is going to be a big day. So, good morning, David.
Hello, Maria.
How are you today?
I'm all right. I'm a bit tired, actually. I had a run-through of the Wembley event on Saturday, and it took a bit out of me, really, so I'm just recharging, because it's about 9 hours in four sections now, and about 1,400 images and videos and stuff. So it's a massive presentation. But of course, because I connect dots across the vast range of subjects, that's why it takes that long, because you're not talking about one subject for 9 hours. Well, you are. You're talking about one theme, but the elements of it, ancient, modern, deep in the rabbit hole beyond human sight, reflecting into people's everyday experience in banking and manipulated wars and jobs and all the rest of it. It's a massive work of creating a tapestry from what appear on the surface to be individual strands. So it's a lot of work to put together, but it's also challenging physically when you're kind of doing it. But I think I'm tired this time, because I haven't spoken since I was in Hawaii in March time. So because I've been writing a book and getting Wembley together. So I think that's probably why I was a bit tired. My body's saying, "What's going on? I thought you'd stop this."
Right.
But I haven't.
Well, it's a lot. I mean, you know, just speaking for 9 hours would drain anybody. You know, when I was a young girl, I had the opportunity to go into New York when Jerry Lewis used to do his telethons. And I had volunteered with my sister to answer phones or whatever. And what a lot of people didn't realize, because he was going, you know, 24 hours at a time, is they actually had a hospital bed in back of the stage for him with an oxygen tent. So every time he left the stage, they would put him in that bed under the oxygen.
Whoa. I haven't got to that point yet.
Well, I don't want you to get to that point. We need you, David. Yeah. How is Wembley going? How's it filling up? People are asking.
About three quarters of the tickets are gone, you know, it's a big arena of many thousands of people, so that's kind of encouraging. And but you know, I think, you know, the point is that, you know, we have to have a focusing of minds here. It's starting to get almost laughable in a symbolic sense, as I watch the TV news here and there and see the unfolding stories that they're putting out and what's happening in the world. And it's straight out of my books from 15 years ago. I mean, you know, it's not prophecy. It's if you do the research and you find out what the projected agenda is, then unless something intervenes to stop that agenda unfolding, then you can predict the future. I mean, it's real straightforward. And what we've got to really focus our minds on is the fact that we need to be that intervention that stops this happening. I mean, you know, when you've got a situation, Maria, where currently it's, oh, are Israel gonna attack Iran and all this stuff and going on, and people saying, oh, what would the implications for that be for the rest of the world and all that stuff? We're talking about a nation in Israel of less than 8 million people. That's less than the population of London. Mm-hmm. And great numbers of that population in Israel do not want to attack Iran, anything but.
Right.
And you've got a country of 300 million plus in the United States and hundreds of millions in Europe. And they're going, oh, what's going to happen? I mean, you know, it's ludicrous that people are looking on and allowing Israel to call the shots. And this absolutely demented man, Netanyahu, who apparently goes back a long way with Mitt Romney. When you do the research, this has been coming for a long time. You know, we've got this on-the-surface situation going on. Are they going to attack Iran and what's going to happen, all that stuff? But behind that, deeper in it, those that control the United States are those that control Britain and the European Union, are those that control Israel. So are those that control Saudi Arabia, those that control the United Arab Emirates and Qatar. So all these players in the game that appear to be some kind of coalition against Iran, they're actually just players in the cabal, or agents of the cabal, or gophers for the cabal. And so there's two stories running, really. There's the one comes out on the news, which seems to be that everything is fragmented and all what's going to happen next. And then there's the one under that, where they've been planning this for at least decades, and probably well into the 19th century, if you see some of the things that were written then.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely agree. And, you know, I was reading yesterday there are 25 countries that are partaking in an armada right outside of Iran for 12 days of military exercises.
Yeah, I mean, it's a joke. I mean, what you know when a government spokesperson in the United States, European Union, Britain, in any of these countries, when they stand up and say something, you know they're lying. I mean, it's sad that that's true, but it is. They're lying because they can't tell you the truth, or the game would be up. Oh, this has all been planned a long time. We're just giving you some excuses so that we can do what we plan to do for decades. I mean, they can't do that. So to hide the truth of how it's all coordinated and heading in a very long planned direction, they have to lie. Mm. So, you know, I've been writing about this for so long. And so you've got a situation where, okay, we want to go into Afghanistan. Right. Okay. 9/11, blame it on bin Laden. Say the Taliban are protecting him into Afghanistan. Okay. We want to go into Iraq. Oh, good. Weapons of mass destruction. We'll tell them they got weapons of mass destruction and they can hit Britain and America and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they get in there. They don't find them, but they're in there.
Right.
The job's done. They're in there. Mm-hmm. And now it's okay. We want Libya now. We want Libya because they've got at least semi-independent banking system. They've got lots of oil. What can we do? I tell you what, I've got a great idea. What we'll do is we'll arm and train insurgents and stuff, and we'll say they're rebels. And what we'll do is we'll get them to start attacking the government targets, right? And at that point, we won't say anything. Media, silent. Mm. And then, on cue, when the government military fire back, that's when we cue the media, and they'll say, Gaddafi's killing his own people. And then you go, okay, well, we did that. Okay, we got that resolution 1973, which did not give us permission to bomb whole cities of civilians in Libya, but, you know, we just ignored the UN Security Council anyway, so there we go. Anyway, we sorted that out. We've now created a total mess there. It's all like civil war and crikey, like the Stone Age in many ways. But we got the oil, we got the banking system. That's great. Okay, now Syria's next. Is Syria on the next on the list? Yeah, Syria's next. Okay, what can we do there? Mm-hmm. Well, it worked in Libya, didn't it?
Right.
Well, I suppose it did. Well, I tell you what, let's move some of them Libyan people into Syria. Let's do the same. Let's let's get them to attack government targets, and then when Assad and stuff fire back, then we say they're killing their own people, right? But what about Iran, mate? Because they've not attacked anybody since 1700 and something.
Right.
And, you know, well, are they getting nuclear power or something, aren't they? We'll say it's a nuclear weapons program. That's the one. That'll do.
Right.
Media, they won't question it. They'll tell it. And so it goes on and on and on. And actually, the plan, picking off country after country after country, has been in place for a long, long time. The only thing that they're doing is finding the excuses, some of them increasingly ludicrous. But that's all that's happening before our eyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you think of this Muslim film, Muslim Innocence, and the reaction to it?
Well, you know, I said a lot of years ago now, Maria, that the world was like throwing 50 balls of wool into a little room, putting 50 kittens in, shutting the door, coming out coming back 2 hours later, and then saying, sort that out.
Hmm.
Because, you know, people have their own little box, their own little prison. It's called a belief system. And if you have a belief system, not in the sense of, I believe this, and I have a right to believe this, that's fair enough, this religion, this political belief, okay, fine. But it goes a step further, that my belief is the right one, everyone else is wrong.
Right.
And also, if you dare to question my belief, or question that the characters that I believe in, and the story that I believe in, then I'm going to go crazy. You cannot do that. How dare you do that? And so what you've got is a playground which is open for you to play child off against child in adult bodies anytime you want. Hmm. And so they want massive upheaval in their target area, which is the North Africa and the Middle East,
right,
currently. And so you produce a film, and then you basically tell people that they've got to go crazy in response to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get some agent provocateurs that started off, your own people, and the others will follow. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, come on. Let's do what these people at the front are doing. And it's all a cover for, like I say, this whole scenario that's been planned for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So by using this film, they're covering up the fact that these attacks were all planned and coordinated, a la the way they produced the rebels to act on cue in Libya and Syria. And so now we've got this diversion where everyone's blaming this film, and that's become the focus. And while we're, you know, looking in that direction, or most people are, they're not seeing what's really going on. But, you know, it's like if we were adults and informed, then we'd look at that situation with the film and we'd say, this is just, and I've seen bits of it on YouTube just to see what they were talking about. You know, I'm not a supporter of Islam, I'm not a supporter of any religion, but it's just grotesque, gratuitous insult.
Right.
It's been done so grotesquely and so gratuitously, because that was the idea, to get that response. And if you go, you know, deep enough into all this, you'll be connecting the filmmakers and those behind the filmmakers into the intelligence network and all that stuff. It's all coordinated. And something that was bound to get the reaction that it did. And then, of course, you get the copycat, because once some people start doing it, people in other countries watch
famous.
The news, and then they do it, and and so it goes on. You know, and it's a very simple thing, you know, to encompass all of this, Maria, is that much of humanity is insane. And I'm not saying that as a throwaway line.
Right.
It is clinically insane in the sense that it is not conscious. It operates on a fraction of its multidimensional infinite self. Its point of attention has been pulled way out of the consciousness that it really is into the five senses, which can perceive reality and decode reality and filter reality on such a tiny, tiny scale that, you know, I used a picture which I got, you know, my great artist friend Neil Haig to knock up for me in this, and I use it at Wembley. And basically, the span of or perception of the possible is absolutely crucial to all this, because if you've got a very narrow and limited sense of the possible, then when a lie comes in, for instance, what it may be a lie about what happened in history, it may be a lie from the government, it may be a lie about, you know, what happened in the theater in Colorado, anything. If you have got a narrow band of perception of possibility, then you've got no response to the lie. You've got no alternative to the lie,
right?
Because you cannot see any alternative. So all that's left is you believe the lie. For instance, if you don't have in your span of possibility, and it's a piece of cake, actually, with what they know now, that people can be mind-controlled to either carry out mass killings or be in the wrong place at the wrong time to be blamed for it when other people have done it, then when they announce that some guy's gone crazy with a gun in a Sikh temple or in a movie theater, your span of possibility means you have no alternative to the lie, and so the lie gets believed. And it's the same with you know, the religions and stuff. What religions do? What are religions? They are very powerful belief systems. They basically are a blueprint, and they say that everything you need to know, here we go, everything you need to know is between these two covers. So your span of the light against your sense of the possible is now between two covers.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's outside of that, or something is suggested to be true that contradicts that, then your perception of the possible will shut that out by reflex action. In fact, may get very, very angry and start being violent even.
Right.
And so I've observed this for a long time, how the suppression of the sense of the possible, the perception of the possible, is systematically done. Because the more they can suppress that, the more they can do things and manipulate people in that area outside the sense of the possible, and they can do it with a free rein, because most people will never even think that you're doing what you're doing because they don't believe it's possible. I had a very interesting experience, Maria, about 2 weeks ago. On this island where I live, the Isle of Wight, it's not very big. It's quite small, actually, about 130,000 people. But twice a year, they have major pop festivals here. And they have one in September called the Bestival. 54,000 people were there watching the different bands and all that stuff. Stevie Wonder was here and all that stuff. And actually felt the need to push Obama to the audience. But he has not done his research either. But I was asked to go and speak there for an hour and a half or so to anyone who wanted to come. So I said, fair enough. And I knew that when I went there that I would have people that are into my work and others that just want to ridicule or abuse.
Right.
So you know what you're going into. And so I turned up and I got what it always happens at these festivals, these pop festivals when I talk. And but it was funny because at one point, someone shouted out, "What about the reptiles? You know, basically crazy." And I said to them, okay, everyone put their hand up who thinks that they can see everything in the space that they're currently looking at. Some people put their hand up. Unbelievable. Right. I said that the electromagnetic spectrum, according to mainstream science, is something like 0.005% of the what exists in the universe. And that visible light, which is the only narrow band that we can pull into a conscious world that we see. And I said, okay, so the overwhelming, almost entirety of the universe, you can't see.
Right.
So then I said, so tell me what's in there. Tell me what exists in that almost entirety of the universe that you can't see. Silence.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Exactly. Right. And I said, you know, at least I've got the intelligence to know I don't know, and thus I'm open to, on the basis of evidence, to what some of what does go on there and how it affects, you know, the world that we live in. But it's like the perception of the possible becomes so programmed, so software-like, that the very fact that the almost entirety of the universe we can't see.
Right.
When I said to them, okay, X-rays, infrared, you can't even see that. Technology can see that. You can't even see that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Good
and
point.
So, and you're pontificating and ridiculing what might go on outside outside the little narrow band that you can see. And one guy said to me, why reptiles? And I said to him, well, why humans? And it was lovely. He said, well, humans have got two legs. And I said, so only humans can have two legs. I mean, this is what I mean by the suppression of the sense of the possible.
Hmm.
People in very large numbers live in this narrow band of perception of the possible, and thus all these things that are happening, they're not, A, aware of them, and two, they would dismiss them and do by reflex action.
Mm-hmm.
On no basis whatsoever, except that they can't perceive that it could be happening.
Well, I think that what people argue against is what really scares them to the core. And if you look, I mean, you know better than anybody that most people are trapped by their five senses.
Yes, and the five senses, of course, because they are decoding such a narrow band of reality, are themselves, by their very nature and the narrow band that they interact with, they have a desperately narrow sense of the possible.
Right.
Because, you know, if you interact with this world as if it's solid, when it's not, it can't be, it's made of atoms and stuff, they say, that have no solidity, and it's very, you don't have to delve into this reality business very much before you hit the obvious fact that this world isn't solid.
Mm-hmm.
But if you believe it is, then that solidity alone is going to massively suppress and dilute your sense of the possible, because when you're interacting with something that is in your mind solid, limitation immediately. It's like shape-shifting.
Mm-hmm.
People dismiss sense of the possible, but shape-shifting is possible because you can't go from a solid body to a solid body, but that's not what's happening. What's happening is everything in its base form in this universe is an energetic field. It's a vibrational field, a waveform field. And it's the waveform field that shifts. And as the observer decodes that shift into from the vibrational through the senses to the electrical to the brain, it then decodes field one, and then it decodes field two. And as it does so, the observer sees a shift, apparently physical shift, it's actually holographic, between one form and another form. It's not a solid shift. That would be impossible. But there is no solidity. Therefore, it's an energetic shift. But because of the this narrow band of the sense of the possible and the lack of research and actually opening your eyes to the world mm-hmm. and asking questions like who are we, where are we, what is this reality, because they are not asked by vast numbers of people,
right.
It puts them in this band of possibility, which has them dismissing things as if they're funny and a joke,
mm-hmm.
when you can sit them down and very calmly and very easily explain why they're so logical and what's actually happening. But they never get that far. And thus, if you have a narrow band of the possible, then you are a manipulator's party trick.
Mm.
And most people are, and that's why we're in the world we're in.
Right. Hey, I totally agree. You know, I was interviewing Jesse Ventura last week, and he told me his show got picked up again for November, and he said he was actually going to be doing a show on reptilians.
Really?
And he asked me what I thought of that. And I said to him, have you seen the governor of Arizona? You know, and he got a laugh out of it. And I wondered if he had interviewed you for that segment.
Well, I could tell you an unpleasant story, actually, involving Jesse Ventura, because his program on True TV contacted me in 2011. And I was speaking in Cleveland, Ohio, and the program producer said that Jesse Ventura wants to come and talk to you. Fair enough, yeah, okay. And I arrived at the theater, and I was going to do it just before the start, and the start was at 10 o'clock, so it had to be early. And Jesse Ventura had come on the train because he's changed his mind now, but he said he would never fly again. And it was a funny thing, Maria. I've come across this before in television in various parts of the world, not least in Britain, where I said to the producer when they arrived, you know, I said, where's Jesse? I'll go and say hello. Oh, no, it's best if he meets you on when we're filming. I thought, I've heard this one before. So the alarm bells start ringing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go down to this room where they've set the cameras up. And sat down waiting, you know. And then suddenly he goes, okay, cue. And they start the camera. Jesse Ventura walks in. And I stood up, said hello. He was very unfriendly. Sat down. And then starts going on. So you talk about reptiles. Well, reptilians, yeah. I've never seen one. I'm 60 years of age. I've never seen one. I said, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, how much you earn doing this? And so and so and so. And I said, look, I'm going to talk for 8-9 hours in a minute, and I'm going to put all this together. I have to sit and listen for 9 hours. At this point, I thought I've had enough and said me piece and left. And I left him sitting there, really. And then he left the building, and I got on the stage and talked for 9 hours. It was a very unpleasant experience, and it's an interesting, but not a new one to me. But this is an important point, Maria.
Right.
I said earlier that everyone has their own box unless they really are opening in some level to consciousness.
Right.
And this whole conspiracy arena is full of people in boxes. They may be slightly bigger boxes than you find in the mainstream, and often are. They are big enough to encompass the fact that there's some kind of conspiracy going on here. But it's hilarious to me when I see people who they look at others and their reaction to them where they're at. There's some kind of conspiracy going on here. And then they treat others who've gone further down the road than they have and are willing to look at things they're not in the same way that other people treat them. I've used the analogy of coming out of the womb with a backpack on, symbolically,
right.
With a tent in it, And, you know, the vast majority of people, they go a few strides symbolically and pitch their tent in terms of their perception and everything. Some people go a bit further, and some people go as far as to realize, hey, there's a conspiracy going on here.
Right.
And as people go further forward before they pitch their tent, everyone who's already pitched their tent behind them sees them as extreme, often strange or crazy. But you go through them, you go past them, because you haven't got a tent on your back, because you realize, actually, you're never going to know it all.
Right.
That's what you need a tent for. And they'll see you in the same terms that others see them. And that was the experience that I had with Jesse Ventura. It was like, you're just treating me in the way that others treat you.
Right.
Can you not see it? And I won't pleased, I'll tell you that. But, you know, maybe.
Well, it'll be interesting to see then who he's got on the show to talk about. Yeah, I mean, when he said that, you know, we had a limited time, so, you know, and he's a fast talker. I didn't get a chance to say, oh, are you interviewing David Icke on that? So I guess it'll be interesting to see how he presents the reptilians and who he's presenting it with.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, it's funny. I mean, I've been talking about this for so long, this whole reptilian thing. When I first came across it and first started to go public with it, I put, various words about reptilians and reptilian this and reptilian that in terms of manipulators. And there was something like 33 pages on Google.
Right.
Put it in now and you'll see the difference. And, it's something that people are going to have to look at eventually. And it's not just that either. It's not just the reptilian angle. There are many other angles to it, which is what I'm going to go into in Wembley. I'm going to push the cutting edge a long way forward.
Right.
It's this whole idea that, again, it's the suppression of the perception of the possible. Mm-hmm. Jesse Ventura, certainly at the point where he interviewed me, gave his opinion about me, masquerading as an interview. His perception of the possible did not include that something non-human could be behind this.
Well, something must have shifted.
And thus, he dismisses it by reflex action. Mm. Somebody else in the general population has a suppression of the possible that cannot encompass the fact that there is some kind of conspiracy going on at the level that Jesse Ventura is seeing it. Mm-hmm. Thus, they treat him in the way he treats me. I mean, it's so funny when I watch it. I mean, it's hilarious. It's when I observe the world. It really is.
I know. It's like one big insane asylum. That's for sure. David, we're going to go to a short break. When we get back, I'd like to talk a little bit about this election and Romney and Obama. So stay with us, David, and I'll be right back. I was doing regular radio, and a young man asked if I'd like to do an internet radio show. There wasn't anything like it at the time. People didn't even have speakers on their computers, and if they did, they barely knew how to use them. I said, it sounds like fun, so I'll try it for a few months. I started off DJing 60s music, and then Walt Bush ran for president. Immediately, I became political to try and prevent the idiot king from getting elected. You see, as an environmentalist, I knew what a disastrous choice he'd be. Then I learned our vote means nothing when the Supreme Court decided to make him president. I learned about stolen elections. Then 9/11 happened, and I learned about false flags and how everything I ever learned in school was a lie. Woe was me. Well, now it's 13 years later, and I'm still doing internet radio. Why? So children and grandchildren everywhere may have a fighting chance for a future. Although I never had any desire to do radio, I'm still doing it for future generations. 13 is a lucky number, so come check it out if you're ready for the truth at maria.net. If you resonate with it, by all means, pick a subscription of your choice and get the education you deserve. Real freedom always comes at a cost. Don't let it be your life or your children's lives. Now let's get back to the show. Okay, welcome back to Conversations with David, the one and only David Icke. And for all you lucky people, three quarters of the seats are gone. If you're still waiting, don't wait too long. The Wembley event is on October 27th. What time does that start, David?
Starts sharp at 10 o'clock in the morning, goes on until 10 o'clock in the evening.
Wow.
In four sections, and it's going to be just a mass of dot connecting. And I know for the response of the small audience that was here for the here on the Isle of Wight down the road from me for the run through that it, you know, it's mind blowing stuff when people hear it.
That's great. That's absolutely great, David. Just a little bit more on the film that supposedly set the Middle East on fire. A lot of people are saying, and of course the guy who made the film turns out to be an FBI informant, which, you know, when I first saw the story and saw the crappy film, I knew the CIA's fingerprints were all over it.
Yeah.
But then I don't use only my five senses, and I've been ridiculed my whole life for my sixth sense too, but I don't really care. Just like you don't. It's like I feel sorry for people who are trapped in the five senses in this flat third dimensional world.
Tragic.
It is really, really sad. But they say that the film was could have many different things. Some people are saying it was created to throw Obama under the bus before the election. Some people, myself included, wondering if this new war will prevent an election from happening. And then Mitt Romney came out, and, you know, every time he opens his mouth, he makes George Bush look smart. And accused 47% of all Americans basically of being lazy bloodsuckers on the government yesterday. So it looks like they're both, it looks to me like you can't tell one day from the next who's trying to self-destruct the opponent.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, apart from, you know, fine detail, it doesn't really matter from the greater perspective. But if Romney gets in, I don't think there will be any buffer stops, any sanity whatsoever. He's very, very close to Netanyahu in Israel. He obviously has a life experience in which he has not a clue how the vast majority of people live. I think he's corrupt. He's running for president, for goodness sake. Of course he's corrupt, but deeply, deeply corrupt. And if he's connected to the Mormon Church, and I've done a lot of research over the years into the Mormon Church and its activities that are unofficial, but actually at the core of it, then, you know, he'll be into some very, very dark stuff. So it's a nightmare scenario if he gets in. But then again, you know, you look at the other guy. I mean, what he's done in the last 4 years and was always going to do, despite all the fancy words in his election campaign. They do tend to like two-term presidents because it means that, you know, a process can move forward with basically the same people without having to, you know, get new staff in and do everything and change it all over. I mean, you know, you've got the two-term Reagan-Bush, two-term Clinton, two-term Boy-Bush. Mm-hmm. So they like two terms. But, you know, we've reached the point where it hardly matters except in fine detail. I mean, you know, you've got Romney very close to Netanyahu, but look who were the handlers, and one of them still is, of Obama from day one. Rahm Emanuel, now the Chicago mayor, and David Axelrod, they're both first and foremost there to go into bat and direct events on behalf of the agenda of the Rothschilds and Israel.
Right.
Of course, they ran the White House, and Axelrod still does. I'm sure Axelrod's running this campaign to get him in the White House as he ran the last one. So, you know, you've got this situation going where, you know, I mean, Romney, he seems to be certainly in the Boyd Bush class of intellect. But again, you've got the Israel, Rothschild Zionist, as I call it, connection into the Democratic Party, but you've got it also into the Republican Party, and we've reached a point now where it is becoming so blatant. Either they are desperately trying to push this on as fast as they can because they fear that if they don't, then they won't get this through, world that they want to bring in, or they just couldn't give a damn anymore. Because when you're watching the Republican convention and you're seeing, if you so and so, and they do, and it's clearly gone one way. The chair believes it's gone this way. It's like, what? I mean, it was just unbelievable, really. I mean, it's just got to the point where the whole convention party political system is just blatantly an irrelevant nonsense. Because in the end, whoever gets in, they won't be running the country anyway. They won't be directing events. Those behind them will. The neocons, if Romney gets in, and the group like Soros and the Clintons and Brzezinski that I call the democons, if Obama gets back in, you know, how more obvious can it be that voting is an irrelevance?
Right. Either way, the people lose.
Yeah, this is a great line I heard in America many, many years ago when I was traveling around. Doesn't matter who you vote for, the government still gets in.
Right.
And it's the secret government, it's the government you never see, because you have the neocons running the Republican Party, you have the democons, as I call them, running the Democratic Party, and the democons and the neocons at the next level then answer to the same force, the same masters. So it doesn't matter who's in power, because that force, one step back, is in power, whoever's in government. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this whole party political system was created specifically to maintain control after their more overt control over the centuries of royal dictatorship was no longer acceptable to the people. They would have liked to have continued, if they could, the royal dictatorships like we had in Europe and stuff. Mm-hmm. We still got a queen here. It's got far more power than people believe. The number of royal families in Europe still surviving in Spain and places like that, Sweden. But there came a point where they couldn't maintain that anymore because people were rebelling against it. And so they needed a structure, because the danger at that time was that some kind of form of government would appear where independent people with their own mind would get into positions of representing the population and what have you. Mm-hmm. So they came up with this structure of political parties, and the political parties attracted all the funding and all the promotion. And so to become a member of Congress or the British Parliament, any parliament, you pretty much, there's rare examples of it, but you pretty much cannot become a politician in a major parliament unless you are a member of one of usually two, sometimes three major political parties in that country. Mm-hmm. And so you want to be a politician, okay? Maybe you're genuine. Maybe you want to really make a genuine contribution. But you're now going through the selection process. You've got to pick a party, first of all, because if you run as an independent, you're not going to have the money, and you're certainly not going to have the media coverage. So, and people are now up to the point where they're programmed to vote for this color or that color, and not the personality involved. Mm. They know who's the best person. No, it's what color rosette are you wearing? Oh, I'll vote for you then. And so you want to be a politician. And so now you've picked a party. Now you have to persuade the selection board in your constituency, in your area, or in your state, as it is in America, that you're the man or woman to be selected to run for office. to do that, you have got to tell the party what it wants to hear in terms of your views. You might then be selected to run for Parliament or Congress, and so then you go on your election campaign, and you have to tell the people what the party's told you to tell them. You've got to not go with your own instincts, your own feelings on policy and various matters. You've got to sell the party. You're now an agent for the party. You then may get into a Parliament or Congress. And if you're going to progress up the greasy pole, eventually maybe into government, then you have got to take the whip and vote as you're told to vote. Otherwise, you're known as a rebel, and the rebels who have their own mind and vote that way, they do not get into any form of high office, except on very, very rare occasions. Who dictates the party policy that you have had to sell to get into, that you've had to support to get selected, to sell to get elected to into Parliament, and then to promote and vote in favor of, in support of, when you're a politician? It's the tiny few at the top of the party that are dictating policy who answer to the shadowy people that no one ever sees. Right. Your opposing party has the same structure, and the people at the top of that party are dictating what everyone sells, believes, and votes for in that pyramid, and they answer to the same shadowy group that the other one does. This is how it works.
Right. So there's no room, really, for anybody that's honest. I mean, look how here in the United States, they just raised enough money to push Cynthia McKinney out of her job, to push Dennis Kucinich out of his.
Yes, this is the thing, you see. They don't want independent people with a mind who can see outside of the song sheet. They want song sheet people. I mean, Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate are bought and paid for. There's the odd maverick who doesn't get into places of power, but can get on the floor and say some relevant things. But they're not going to get anywhere in terms of the structure of government and the structure of their party, because those people are the last thing that anyone wants. And what you saw in the Republican convention most blatantly was how any maverick, anyone with an independent voice, was just completely cut out of the whole facade of a convention. And this is where it's going even more now. They don't want mavericks. They want yes people, and that's what they get. And the yes people usually are brainless. They only do what they do because they want a bit of power or prestige, so they'll do whatever and say whatever they need to say to do that. They don't think outside the norm. They don't see beyond what they're told to think, and thus that's the caliber of politician that actually gets into positions of deciding what happens.
We have an expression, terrifying.
I know. Really.
Well, we have an expression for that here in America. We call them ass kissers.
Yeah.
What does it look like from Europe's point of view? I mean, you're over there in the UK, and you see their papers, and you've got, you know, I'm sure you talk to people to feel the pulse. What do they think when they look at America from the outside?
Well, anyone with a mind who actually watched anything of the Republican convention, you know, I mean, their feeling is, it's crazy. I mean, it's a joke. What they need to realize is although not quite so obviously, but it's going on here. The same thing's going on here. There's a few people at the top of the major parties, the Labour and Conservative Party, and they dictate what that party believes, what that policy is going to be, and everyone within the pyramids of the political parties, called politicians or would-be politicians, they then have to toe the line to the dictated policy and direction that comes from the few. I mean, we had a situation during the Blair government where people that were in his so-called government cabinet have since said that they hardly had a say in anything, that decisions even about going to war were being made by Blair and advisors in the background, then they never really had a say in any of it. So this is what's going on all over the place, and you know, it's a progression. So there has always been manipulation of this kind. What's happening is they walk along and increasingly sprint along the road to their goal of this beyond Orwellian global state, is that of course it's becoming more extreme because they're moving forward with it, forward in their terms. And as it becomes more extreme, it becomes more obvious. And so that's what we're seeing now, Maria. We're seeing the journey of this global conspiracy reaching the point now where it is becoming so extreme that it's in your face.
Well, you know, a lot of
they don't care, but you know, we should make sure they do care. But to do that, large numbers of people have got to realize that there's nothing more important in their lives, nothing, than to address what's happening and to start to get involved in this. Because, oh no, my children are more important. Oh really? Yes. Well, imagine the world your children and grandchildren are going to live in, given where we are now, and they're not looking to have the whole shebang in, and I explain what the whole shebang is at the Wembley event, until 2050, 2060.
Mm-hmm.
So look at where we are now, and then imagine what the world will be like then. By that kind of period, if we allow it, there will be not only no free expression, no free movement, there will be no free thought, because your thoughts will be monitored. The technology exists now.
Right.
So look at it, people, and tell me one thing in your life and your children and grandchildren's lives that is more important than making sure that doesn't happen.
Hey, absolutely nothing. You know, when people ask me why I do what I do, I mean, let's face it, I could be making money like everybody else with a job. Because I say, you know, I have children, I have grandchildren. I look at everybody, you know, having babies, you know, like there's no tomorrow, you know, in Arizona at least. And I'm like, what could I possibly do that's more important than what I am doing? You know, I've already, like you, you know, we've seen our 60 years, you know. I could take the attitude, 2050, who the hell cares? I'll be long dead. But we don't, because we actually consider future generations, which is something obviously even religious people don't do.
I said to this, overwhelmingly young people at this festival event, for obvious reasons, music festival, but there were some older people there too. But I said to them, look, you know, I'm 60. Yeah, what have I got left? 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, maybe? But certainly a fraction of what all you have got left.
Right.
And I'm standing up here trying to point out what your future is going to be that in the end won't affect me if you don't get involved and start realizing this is going on.
Exactly. We could take the attitude, we don't care, it's not going to be our world.
And someone shouted out, how much are you getting paid?
Yeah, how much
I was getting paid nothing.
Right.
I went there
right.
because I wanted to, you know, try to exchange information with people that desperately need to understand what's going on. But when you've explained, you know, some of the things that are happening and where it's planned to go, and blatantly it's happening, because you're only going to look at the world.
Hey,
and that's all that's all some people, there's a lot of intelligent people there, that's all some people can respond to it. It's unbelievable.
But
it's
you're like, always going to have jackals in every audience, and
yeah,
you know.
I mean, it's like that's not what concerns me. It's the fact that people can be so completely comatose.
I know. Well, that's a choice.
Can be their only response because right. they can't see it.
But it's
they
a choice, David.
The obvious.
Right. It's a choice, though. They choose to be what the best saying I've come across in the past year, willfully ignorant.
Mm.
And you can't, you know, you can't fix stupid and you can't fix lazy. And to me, those are people that have already made their soul's decision. And I don't even want to waste time talking to them because there's so many people that want to know what we know. I'd rather talk to people that want the information. It's kind of like trying to force feed somebody who doesn't want to eat. It's like, hey, if you don't want to eat, lay down and die. That's your prerogative. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the last thing I ever do is trying to persuade anyone of anything. But you know,
but I understand having to
an event like that, which is free for everybody, just turn up.
Right. And that, I understand.
And that's their only response. Then, and, you know, they have got a major, major problem.
Well, I agree. I mean, you know, listen, David, I've taken slings and arrows my entire life. I mean, since I was 5 years old because of my vision. And, you know, I was called every name in the books, including the Antichrist. You know, hey, it was just happened. I was born this way. And, so I can totally understand what you go through, but you do the same thing I do. You keep going because you really do have love for people and you want to wake up as many people as possible.
Well, that's the idea. And that's why I've, you know, we've taken this big financial risk of hiring this big arena. Got some more ideas as well, which we're working on as well, in relation to Wembley. And, we're trying to make a bit of a focal point here to, give an opportunity for people to see even those that are into this information up to a point to see how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Right, I know.
And therefore to understand the five sense world, because why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? If you go deep enough in the rabbit hole, why they're doing it becomes blatantly obvious. Only by going deep in the rabbit hole and opening your mind to all possibility and getting rid of this suppression of the possible, or the sense of the possible, can you get to the point where the five sense world of the conscious mind starts to make real sense of why this is happening and why that's happening and what the intention is.
Right.
And we'll see how it goes.
Hey, think of the vortex of positive energy that you're going to be opening up in one of the countries on Earth that needs it the most.
Yeah, that's the idea.
That's mind-blowing. I mean, even if you stood...
It's energetic. It's energetic. It's not holographic. The answers don't lie in the holographic. They lie in the deeper levels of energy.
Absolutely.
And that's what this event's all about, really.
Right. So even if you stood there mute for 9 hours, you're going to create such a counter energy to the negative there that I think it's going to rattle them all the way to the City of London.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. And, of course, in Britain, and particularly London, of course, in the last few months through the summer, we've had a big energetic lockdowns with mass public rituals called the Diamond Jubilee celebrations for the Queen and the Olympics. And it's some of the things that went on in the Olympics, like the opening and closing ceremonies and stuff like that, the reason for that is becoming clear.
Absolutely. Well, David, we'll be talking again next month, so I'm pretty excited. And, you know, just get your downtime and take good care of yourself because you're going to need all the energy you've got.
That's for sure.
All right. Thanks so
Cheers,
much.
Man.
Take care.
All the best. Bye.
Bye. David Icke, if you're going to Wembley, I think it's going to be awesome. And imagine being in a stadium with so many like-minded people instead of being out in the world with the Night of the Living Dead on Planet of the Apes. I know some of my new listeners have said, wow, you used that expression. I used it too. Anyway, what are you going to do? God love everybody, right? You just keep on doing what you're doing. And people ask me, what should I do? Find out what you do well and start doing it. Because, you know, 2050 is going to be an ugly situation. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active. Or get radioactive. Subscribe today.